Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of By the Numbers. I'm your host, Richard Lewis. Joining me, as he does every episode, is Duncan Thorin Shields. It is insanely fucking early to be doing this. I got up at like 5:30 in the morning to meet the commitments to the show. That's how much we love our patrons. Dedication to the cause. I think it's interesting, actually, because this episode, I'm gonna do it. I joked sort of before about how people always complain, or you know, how, why do you always whinge about stuff? Okay. Why do you have a moan at the start of the fucking show? Well, you already know what it's about, right? I mean, we've already talked a little bit about this privately. It was a strange week for me because it was a week that kind of showcased everything that was good about Counter-Strike. We had ESL One Cologne. Fantastic event, fantastic live audience, fantastic storylines, high quality CS. I was glued to my screen watching it. Always when a big event like that comes around, it rekindles within me. This is what, you know, this is why I got into it years ago, you know. But the week prior to that was just fucking AIDS rammed right into me at high speeds, like on a molecular level. AIDS beamed directly into my brain with a side order of myxomatosis and every other rotten illness on planet Earth that you can imagine. And I'll explain why. I literally spent the week prior to ESL1 basically just getting death threats, like endless death threats, endless abuse, just constantly spammed on Twitter, threatening emails. And I realized I just... fuck this community. Like it just hit me in that moment, like just absolutely fuck. There's a shift happening.
Well, both things happen, don't they, Richard? On the one hand, when you have that amazing event that encapsulates everything you love about CS, it does rekindle the joy and you go, this is why I'm into it. But then you also have the reverse, don't you? You have the moment where all the wrong cunts come out, swirl at the right time, attack. They get enough of the plebs on their side and you just go, actually, fuck everything about this community. I'm out.
No, but I think it's important to recognize what's happening here. There's a shift. There's a shift happening in the community that basically the plebs that were new to the community that have been sort of loitering, they've now got to that stage where they feel comfortable voicing their ridiculous opinions. They think they know now. They think they're in now. And we're talking kids. We're talking teenagers. A lot of cases, people who aren't even old enough to legally play the game in their country. And now they've taken to social media. And they think that their opinion is on a par with, you know, somebody that's been involved in the community for years and years and years. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the average fan that has some tenure. And unfortunately, at the other end, you've got older fans who can't dedicate the same amount of time to esports. Maybe their esports dream didn't take them anywhere where they can sort of work in the scene. Every motherfucker's got to go out there and get a job. Every motherfucker wants to go out there and start a family. You know, I talked a lot. I get people hitting me up, you know, they're 28, they're 30, and they're like, you know, oh, this is the first event I've watched in ages. Wish he still had the time. You know, there's this juxtaposition of these two types in the community. And of course, we all know which ones are being the vocal ones. So you say, well, Richard, what could you possibly do to be receiving death threats again? What have you done this time? I mean, shit, it's not like I've broken any big stories, which you people love to threaten me for. It's not like I have made a joke with a fellow professional member of talent, which I know you motherfuckers hate when people do that as well. It's not as if I've actually criticized any players. Quite the opposite, of course. I've been quite glowing in my praise over the course of ESL1. What could it be? I mean, these are all things that usually stir me getting a week of death threats. Well, no. What actually happened was, as you know, we did the podcast, the last episode, and we talked about the doc issue. The most requested topic to talk about the podcast. Richard, how can you ignore the doc issue? How can you not talk about the doc issue? Actually, I think it's a lot of bullshit, guys. I think it'll probably get exposed as bullshit very soon, so I'm just not going to articulate my opinion. No, but you tweeted at a Face It staff member, so you must now you know, like, listen, I don't know who these fucking retards are, okay? But the thoughts in my head get shared on a basis that I want. I'm not a fucking jukebox. You don't stick a quarter in my asshole and music comes out my mouth. The thoughts in my head, I express them as and when I want and feel that they're appropriate, right? But no, tell us. I am entitled to your... The people tweeting at me endlessly. Talk about this topic that, because I'm entitled to know what you think about it. I've never tweeted, by the way, at anybody, like a film director, a writer, a politician. Oh. You know, I've never tweeted at them going, tell me what you think about this issue now. Because I would never in my wildest dreams believe that they, like, I am important enough to know what they think on an issue. So anyway, I did it against my better judgment, because I still think there's a lot of rotten bullshit about it. And I said what I thought. And let's be clear, this is the most outrageously unbelievable story that any player has entered.
Like, it's one of those ones where even if some of it turned out to be right, in spite of how implausible it is, like, we aren't in a court of law. In a court of law, you would have to assume the person is 100% innocent in all scenarios until proven otherwise. That's not how it works in just being a person with an opinion. There's something called a preponderance of evidence. In the same way as it doesn't matter that that court found O.J. Simpson not guilty, anyone who looked at the basic amount of evidence goes, well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Right? So
Opinions are different.
So anyway, right? Like, there was one thing I slightly misspoke about. The account that he claims was taken by a cheater who also happens to be his friend, which, right. So again, that doesn't make sense. Oh, has he had a falling out with this guy? No, actually, he still talks to the guy that was coding and selling cheats, as evidenced by the fact that he messaged him on Steam so he could start tweeting at me about what an idiot I am. So obviously still talks to the guy who makes cheats and supposedly stole his account. But it wasn't a VAC ban. It was an Overwatch ban. And a lot of people said, but it's an Overwatch ban, Richard. An Overwatch ban isn't the same as VAC. Scream had an Overwatch ban. And it's like, okay, right. Scream, a guy that in his heyday stretched the credulity of what you were seeing on your screen because his shots were so accurate, basically being thrown to the wolves in fucking matchmaking with all the plebs that don't play at a high level, might not even watch professional CS and see the standard that it's at, making a judgment call, and he still had to go to Valve to get that Overwatch ban overturned. Functionally, the Overwatch ban is simply a way to ban cheaters without the sort of burden being on Valve's anti-cheat system. They are functionally the same. And now we're at a stage where, with all the additional machine learning and everything, you won't see Overwatch / game bans get overturned. So the account was still cheated on, and we can only assume that it happened the way Doc said, and it was the other guy who stole the account that he's still friends with for some reason. But there was a ton of other stuff we didn't even get into, right? He's got a partnered Twitch account. You need an adult to sign for those. I know, because I've got one. You enter into a, it's not like the non-partnered ones, the affiliates or whatever they call them, where you can sign at 13.
Okay.
But once you get subs and ads and all of that, an adult has to sign the contract. So who is that adult? You know, there's all these additional questions. No sooner did all the attention he get blow up, he's plugging these fucking, like, rent skins. You know, this is a kid who's super shy, but he wasted no fucking time in getting a fucking sponsorship deal with a shady skin site. Okay, that's fine also. So why am I telling you all about this again? Look, all I'm saying is I think this is fucking bullshit. So there's just too much wrong with the story. And by his own admission, he's lied already a handful of times about his story. So I think it is fair to say in a podcast that discusses CS that people are asking me to discuss it, that we discuss it. That's all I did. No, 2 days. You are abusing and bullying a child. If I find you, I will kill you. I cannot imagine what has to go wrong in your life to be the fan of somebody that at that point didn't even speak. They functionally, to all intents and purposes, don't exist. How can you be a fan of that? It's like being a fan of fucking celery. It's just like some generic wishy-washy bullshit that nobody really gives a fuck about. But apparently, diehard fans. Diehard fans. And do you know why there's diehard fans of this kid? Because they're kids, and they're projecting, and they're feeling like, oh, maybe it'll be me one day. Maybe I could be the teenager, and how would I feel if people were saying bad things about me? I've used this example before. You'll probably remember it. I remember reading an essay. It was in Bizarre Magazine, great magazine, now defunct. And they published a sort of essay, and I went online and read the whole thing, and it was called The Unrepentant Necrophile. Now, for those that don't know, a necrophile is someone that fucks corpses, right? And, you know, Richard, you've lost it, mate. It's too early. Go to bed. Turn off the podcast, right? There was this woman that was having sex with corpses and got caught. And she went to jail, and they were interviewing her. And they said, how did you manage to evade capture for so long? Like, how did people not expose you, right? And she said, many a mortician walked in on me while I was fucking the corpses, and they just nodded and walked out the room. And the reason they did that is because they were two fucking corpses and wanted the professional courtesy, okay, if I ever caught them, that I never ratted them out.
Fair enough.
That sums up Counter-Strike, guys. That sums up online fandom. You are all unrepentant necrophiles where you don't look at any of the evidence. You just project and you just say, well, if it was me, I'd want the benefit of the doubt. No, look at the fucking evidence, you mad cunts. Look at what's on the table. Does anyone buy this shit for a second? So then 2 days of that, and then it died down. And then he went on stream for 30 minutes. And everyone went, ha, look, he's proven you all wrong by going on stream. So I watched the VOD. I thought, okay, benefit of the doubt. Always happy to eat a slice of humble pie. I'm right so often. It's nice to be fucking wrong, you morons. You'll never know that. Right? You'll never know that feeling of being, oh, it's the same tired, predictable shit again. It's this, isn't it? They're fixing a match. They're doing this. Yeah, that's bullshit. That's nonsense. Yeah, that contract's bogus. That business is going to collapse. You have no idea when you've seen so much shit happen cyclically. You're just calling it all the time. It's nice to be wrong. You go, ooh, a pleasant surprise. Esports can still fucking surprise me with its bullshit. Right? So he went on stream and he was playing, perhaps, maybe. And despite saying he was going to call, there was a weird little out of sync thing. I think he made two calls the entire game. And one was, one banana. Like that, right? Brilliant. Happy about that. And then everyone said, that's it now. There's no way, A, he can be cheating. He can't possibly be cheating because he went on stream. All of his previous story must be true about the parents and everything else. That all must be accurate now because he went on stream, right? All of it's accurate now because he went on stream, right? Now, here's the thing about that, right? Didn't he have a player, also a known cheater, by the way, watching his games remotely and calling for him on comms? So it's not entirely possible that this guy could be... I'm not saying he is. I think this is now getting into the realms of the absurd. But it's not possible that he could just be a camera watching the game and reacting to it and calling on behalf of somebody else. That's definitely possible. It's fucking retarded that we even have to think about that as a possibility. But there's just this mad, deranged web of lies just around the player. There's something still rotten about it. The calling and all of that doesn't look right. So anyway, let me tell you what Doc has to do for me to believe that he's genuine and is a genuine talent. He has to join a team, turn up to a LAN, and then play at 70% of his online capacity. I think they are reasonable things. I think that is reasonable given all of the lies. When that happens, right, because he'll be 18 by then, quite famously, I'll put my arm around him and I'll go, you know what, Doc, son? Sorry about that, but you probably haven't seen as much shit as me. You see some wild shit. Here's a drink. There you go. One banana in the top for you. Fucking have a cocktail and we'll all be pals. We'll all be pals, right? Because I am capable of admitting when I'm wrong. But this is the biggest load of fucking bullshit I've ever fucking seen, right? So When he
and
went
then,
on
of course,
street,
he'll just go, I'd prefer a gutter of gear, Richard. You know, who's talking? Where did that voice come from? There'll be a guy stood behind him.
So, and again, Richard, why do you even care about this? To protect the scene, by the way, because I don't want pro players having to play with dodgy people. I don't want people building up streaming careers predicated on false bullshit and gaining subs and being duplicitous. I don't want people fixing matches. I don't want casinos robbing you all. As of today, no more. Richard will never blow the whistle. I hope you all get fucking robbed blind. Fuck them. Let these liars and scum exploit you. I'm not there anymore. Done with that. It's a waste of my fucking time. I bang my head against a brick wall for months at a time trying to protect you from your own fucking stupidity. I'm not putting up the sign that says don't throw the money in the pond anymore. Throw your fucking money in the pond. I'm not putting up a sign that says don't cross the road. There's fast traffic. Fuck them. Go play in the traffic. I don't give a shit anymore. Ain't worth my time. Right? Right? Because, like I say, after you went on stream, more fucking death threats. More fucking death threats. More abuse. Right, so that's 3 days. Then, of course, I put out a tweet about Rush B Media. Now, Rush B Media, Richard. Everybody said, how dare you say this? He's just a good kid trying to be a journalist. You're threatened by him. Yeah, mate. If I was still doing Ross the fucking League, right, and published anything other than opinion pieces, I'd understand it. What you've got to realize is what Rush B is, and I'm going to talk about that now and why I have ethical problems with it.
No, but Richard, before you jump into that, let me just say this, though. This is one thing that's a good example of where either I'll give someone a slight benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're so new to the scene, they just don't know what the past was like, or they're just liars, because you can certainly criticize us for many, many things or dislike certain things, but the notion that, like, we don't promote people who are in our same field, other journalists, is not only ludicrous because we've done it with so many people.
I know. Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
The amount of people we haven't promoted almost tells you who the cunts are. There's only a few people. Like, the only, like, as long as someone does good work, generally, even if I don't particularly know them or like them, I generally promote their stuff. You know, it's only if I know behind the scenes this guy is a bad person, or they've been a massive asshole to me, to the extent obviously it's just not worth it. You know, it's very, very rare that I've ever seen anything in that sense, actually, of sort of like infighting, you know. Generally, you notice most of the journalists sort of all pretty friendly, actually.
I mean, the charge would work if I hadn't been the person that had brought through more fucking esports journalists than anyone else. It's literally the inverse of reality, which is the problem. This is the problem. It's never just a subjective opinion that might be true, because there's some evidence that says it is, but there's some evidence that says that it isn't true. It's never that. It's always, right, what is the furthest I can get from reality? Racier, and the fucking idiots get there, and then they say, ha, Richard never supports anyone. All he ever supports is his source friends from back in the day, an old man trying to cling to the past desperately. Like, listen, motherfuckers, who was DK? Why did I reach out to him? Why did I promote him? Nell's involved with this Rush B Media. We'll get into that in a second.
Well, that's one thing, Richard. This is the other thing to say, okay, is if you want to go and see who it is in the esports community calls out journalists and says that they're liars and doesn't know whether they're true and harasses them, I'd go with this little list. Don Hassey, number one, he's the one who created the whole thing against DK and the notion that he is somehow a fraud journalist. You've got all of Don Hassey's mates. They're all there on Twitter as well. Rush B is somehow included in that group. I'm not exactly sure. I don't particularly know the guy. Seems to come from that sort of crop. And that is actually one area where, even though I personally don't have any issue with him as a guy, actually, because Nell has his own overlap, as you're saying here, he is mildly associated with that as well. Like, I notice he has had a few times. Fair play to him. He doesn't outright say you're lying. He'll just say my sources said otherwise, you know, which is fair enough. You can do that. Yep. But he, because of his association, he sort of almost gets lumped with those to me. Like, I've never seen DK generally saying this report's a lie that this other person did. This person's a fake and a fraud. Like, it's actually the very community of people who are now mad butthurt they got called out that were the ones who created this environment. I've never done it. You don't see me tweeting, this journalist doesn't know anything. It's all just a lie that he says. Even if it's bullshit, I just ignore him, you know.
Yeah, and again, people don't think, well, why would Richard tweet out, just treat Rush B's stuff for what it is, gossip. So I'm going to get into all of that. But again, let me just preface all of what I'm about to say by, what do you think I give a fuck about the most out of everything in esports? Player rights is pretty high. Consumer protection is pretty high. But ultimately, it comes down to journalism. And that's about me personally. It might be a weird fucking quirk or a hang-up I've got, but I talk about it all the time on the other podcast I do. The death of real journalism is fucked. What's happened to games journalism, political journalism? When I signed up to be a journalist, it was like being fucking sworn in, yes. Right? Like I accept the hallowed code of ethics that all journalists agree to abide to. It's like when you're a doctor with a Hippocratic oath. For me, it was that important. It was that important to me, right? To not lie, to only publish when you're 100% sure. Sam has been there with me. Like, for example, when the Phantom Lord story broke, Sam will tell you, I was a mess. I was so worried. Not because it might be wrong and I might take a hit, because I knew what the implication was for him. And I almost didn't pull the trigger. I almost shit myself. Right? And if I hadn't pulled the trigger, people might still be playing on a casino that, doesn't fucking have accurate outcomes and everything else. But I looked at all the evidence like a journalist is supposed to, and I made a decision in that moment that my obligation to the public outweighed any fear that I might have, okay? Because it's the truth. That's how it should be, right? It isn't sitting on fucking Steam all day getting leaks about, I heard this rumor, I heard that rumor, and then tweeting about it.
I especially, by the way, get mad triggered by people whose source is another person who isn't actually directly connected to the story. Like, when they corroborate with each other, like, yeah, I heard that rumor. That's not a source. You haven't just corroborated anything. Two people who have no ability to corroborate something just agreed with each other to enable one of them to go, oh, I've got three people, and then do a story, you know. There's so much bullshit like that.
Now, I've already talked to Don Hassan, because as you know, I'm all right with Don, right? But
not really cool to just be out actively calling people cheats, like, if you want to be involved in the esports industry.
Yeah, and this is what I mean. So let's just start with what Rush B Media is. So this guy, Rush B, started a podcast. We already had some altercations on Twitter, some spats, which he deleted.
Okay. Didn't see any of these, so...
Yeah, well, he deleted them, which again, I think is a little bit shady, but I suppose I've deleted tweets, not abusive ones. I let the record stand on that front.
Sure.
But, if I tweet something wrong, I don't want it to be dredged up and that person have to go through if I was wrong. So I removed the tweet. You know, it's something I wish more journalists would do, rather than tweet the lie, tweet a retraction, leave the lie up, the lie gets more traction. You know, it seems to me the responsible thing to do is remove the lie. But anyway, so we had some back and forths on Twitter, and I basically, there was a group of them, and it was like, ha ha ha, let's see if we can get blocked by Thorin, fuck Thorin. And I'm just like, listen guys, if your badge of honor is I've been blocked by somebody else, like when you see all those fucking soy drinking fucking retards that are like, blocked by Trump, like, that's your life, mate. Yeah. That's it. You actually think you've achieved something. You want that on your tombstone. That is why you are just stealing oxygen from everyone else on the planet, you unimaginative fucking bore, right? So when people do that, it immediately puts my back up, because I think, well, what's good about being so obnoxious somebody else doesn't want you to interact with them? What's so good about that? It would be like if I went into a lift and just shit my pants and everyone else was like, oh, and they all got out the lift and went, ha ha, owned everyone in that lift. Like, you've still got a fucking, your trousers are still full of shit and everyone else there is talking about what a retard you are. And then you go, and then if you went up to them the next day and you were like, hey guys, want to get in the lift with me? And they went, nah, you're the retard who shit his pants. That'll be the end of it. You wouldn't go, ha, I won that round. No, yeah. you're very much the dickhead, right? So they were all boasting about that. So I was like, well, listen, definitely I will preemptively remove some people from this. So they already had their backup, you know, and started with the whole Richard blocks anyone. No, you have to be a moron. It's just as simple. You're either an idiot or you're rude and obnoxious. It's not disagreement. Many people disagree with me all the time. Colleagues disagree with me all the time on Twitter. I don't immediately block them. What I can't be arsed with is people spamming my feed, people saying demonstrably stupid things, and people that are just rude and trying to get a rise out of me. And by the way, the community always go, why do you argue with people? Well, what's my option? You see, they believe the rule is this. They think this is their right. As somebody who will never have a following, here's what I think about how to handle having a following.
And they thing again. They're like, if I had a massive following, what I'd do is just meet every fan and be nice to him. It's like, well, your fantasy is really irrelevant to my reality.
Yeah, exactly. they all say the same thing. What I would do is I would just ignore it. I would just let people spam your face. Right, I've got 112,000 followers. I have to fucking look at what's in my feed. You know, get people tweeting me stories. Have you seen this? Give me ideas for content. Colleagues tweet me at stuff. I get added in funny tweets. I want to see all that shit. I don't want it to be clogged up with ha ha ha. You are fat and bald. You are fat and bald. You are fat and bald. You said this about Doc. You are fat. And that's just one account. If I don't block that account, that is what they will do with their lives all day because they have nothing. They do nothing. They are nothing. That is their life. That is their release. Now, maybe I should let them have it because obviously they are nothing, right? But and they've got nothing else, but I'm not interested in that. You find yourself another punch bag to take your frustrations out of being a fucking wage slave. I ain't the one, right? So I block them. I fucking block them, right? What's wrong with that? By blocking them, you are empowering them. You don't know shit about what it's like. You don't know shit about what it's like, right? So, fine. I don't block people for disagreement. I block people for that, specifically for that. The fact that 50% of a thread, whenever a tweet or an article or something is discussed about me, is people in that fucking subreddit going, I can't see it, I'm blocked. What does that tell you about this community? It tells me immediately that 50% are utter snivelling cretins. That's what it tells me.
I've always said this, if anyone wants credibility for being blocked, here's what you do. You don't say I was blocked. And just say it on your Reddit account. What you do is you say, this is my Twitter account. You link to it. You say, I was blocked by Richard unfairly. And here's the tweet that I did that he got me blocked. Now, you'll never see that, by the way, because best case scenario, what 10% would have a tweet that even looked vaguely like it could be a reasonable comment? You know, the majority are just going to be someone being rude, being impolite, you know, that saying stupid shit like you're not a journalist. Like, I can already tell you that's why they don't link it, Rich. Because remember, if someone's going to link to something saying that, like, oh, Thorin's racist, obviously, they're going to link to, like, posts about that poll and shit. They're going to link to that Luminosity tweet. That's the good thing to do, by the way. That's evidence. You're not just making it your biased, subjective account. If you don't link to it, and it's your own fucking account we're talking about, I'm going to go ahead, like I said with the Doc thing before. If I was in a court of law, I'd say, yeah, we have to produce the tweets here. I don't need to. I'm just going to make this quick. I'm going to be in and out. I'm going to just sit, go ahead and say, you're full of shit, and there's a reason you're not producing the tweet. Habeas tweetus.
Yeah, heaviest tweakers, motherfuckers, right? So anyway, so let's talk about this Rushbeat guy, right? So basically, why would I have an ethical problem with Rushbeat? Okay, I'll explain it. So first of all, there is the premise of what it is. Now, Don Hassey, for many reasons, primarily because he was a RuneScape hacker, likes anonymity, right? He likes anonymity.
And he's not trying to be a professional as far as I can tell. No. That's fine. You can be a Twitter right. person. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, do whatever you want. No issues with it. Built quite a following for himself. Nell, who work we praised many a time on this show, right? I still have an issue that he's never given his real name. I do not believe you can be doing genuine bona fide. Yeah. I don't believe ethically you can do bona fide reporting about people and not have a real name. Even writing
under the game in that sense, right? Okay, we wouldn't want the guy to get wrecked, but in theory, if you did something really terrible, there should be a way that it should have the consequences for your life. You can't then just go, well, I was behind a secret account anyway, so I'll kind of do my life.
Now, there are some rules against this. There's some rules you might invoke a pen name, but the reality is, whenever you do that, it's usually going to be to protect you from reprisals.
From the government, for example, massive people who might kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
But not just like G2 Esports might get mad that you had some info or whatever.
Right? And generally, it'll go out under what they call a masthead, which is just a fancy way of saying a publication with all of its legal protections and infrastructure in place. And the editor will know who you are. So if there was ever a reason why it would go to court that the things you were saying were untrue, like, for example, a completely false allegation of sexual assault, which I think what happened was that happened to that like MTV guy who made Catfish recently. There was like somebody had come out and said he'd sexually assaulted them while on the set, and then it turned out that, you know, with all the evidence, it just wasn't plausible that it could have happened. So anyway, you know, things like that, right? Obviously, if you're anonymous, you're not accountable, and that's a problem. But here's the thing. Nell has never wanted to give his name. Don Hassey, for obvious reasons, doesn't want his identity being out there. There'd be too many people with an axe to grind. There might be some legal considerations. So they needed a guy that could sort of go out there and do the fucking business end of shit and be public facing. Enter Rush B, who wanted to start his own website, already had his own podcast, right? So first of all, just the premise of what this website is hugely unethical. It's unethical. It's unethical that a guy is being the front for other people's information. It's not his source network. He is basically, Don Hassey will go, look, I've got this. This is how I got this. But he puts his name on it. And Don Hassey isn't, you know what I mean? There's no responsibility for Don Hassey. I said it to him the other day in a DM. I said, listen, I like you, but you are now entering a different world. If you want to be an esports journalist, if you want to be a journalist, full stop, I don't care what beat you're on, there are ethical considerations and you do not meet the criteria. Of course, yeah. So on top of that, right, on top of that, let's have a look at just the premise. And again, I'm sorry I'm saying this, Don, but you admitted it yourself. You're the guy who, to get attention, lied about players cheating in the scene. You said you had evidence. Yeah. You said you knew it was definitely happening. And that is the start of your blossoming into a career. I love the fact that you've recently walked it back, took it back. But because of you, Vax Sucks exists. Because of you, there's now a platform to basically harass pro players who get snappy, flicky headshots or get a lineup through walls. There are people that still believe the lie you told and believe you have been paid off by Valve to walk your statement back. Very ill and disturbed people. That is not the type of person I would want. I couldn't have that person associated with a serious news outlet.
Maybe credibility is shot, isn't it? That's the problem. And the problem is the main thing a journalist has to go on as currency is credibility.
Like, maybe he could be a columnist and write articles about, you know,
he can do opinion stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But when it comes to factual reporting, being associated with that is bad. Okay, so we've got that. Then there's just, this is just a personal anecdote. I'm going to show you some shit because I don't give a fuck. We're going to keep, by the way, we're going to keep by the numbers going, but I doubt you'll see me at a CS event anytime soon. I'm not interested. As I said, fuck all the videos on the people that are robbing you all blind. You obviously enjoy it. Let that happen. Just send me death threats next time you get robbed blind for not saving you from yourself. But anyway, so we will keep by the numbers going for as long as people want it, because I feel the obligation to the patron. So let's talk about this personal anecdote. So I've got a moderator, mods my Discord, right? Great kid, had a lot of shit going on in his life, and he wanted to start his own podcast, and Rush B reached out to him and said, hey, maybe I can put you into my Rush B network. Maybe I can fold you into this thing that I'm building. And he went, yeah, that'd be great. So he started doing this podcast, and Rush B was involved, kind of promoting it and bigging it up. And then he started asking him questions about me. Oh, what's Richard Lewis like? What's he like? Ooh, he's got me blocked on Twitter. Do you like him? Like, kind of trying to soften him up, find out whether or not there's any dirt there. And obviously this guy, like, I've done some shit with this guy. I've known this guy for years. He supported my content since the Trash Talk days. And he's just like, listen, can we stop talking about Richard? It's kind of weird. And then he would always keep bringing me up. So in the end, he told me about it. And I went and confronted Rush B about it. And said, well, you just stop fucking talking about me. You're blocked on Twitter. Fucking suck it the fuck up, buttercup. Deal with it. There's no word. And he's going, no, I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, this moderator's going to fucking lie to me. Right? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, he went back to working with him, but he was so butthurt about the fact they confronted him about it. He then tried to kick this kid off his own podcast, like just replace him without him knowing about it. And then the day before he launched, Rush B Media said, your services will no longer be required. Like, just as the big ship comes sailing in, your services. So he completely basically used this guy for labor and fucked him over out of
spite. Sounds like a good guy.
Yeah, out of spite about me. Now, that isn't even the worst thing that he's done. I'll show you. Hang on. Let me just show you some stuff here. Let me tell you another anecdote. So he went to get a freelance guy to do a story. Now, I don't know how accurate the story is, because I don't think anything came of it so far. But again, stories can be accurate at the time they go to print. And it was this one, Sam. I'll link you to it. This story about Brolin and Golden going to Tempo Storm, that Tempo Storm were interested in maybe adding them and spicing things up in their team. Now, the freelance journalist that wrote this story originally was meant to write it for Rush B Media. And then had a change of heart and decided to take his work, his story, to another publication. Reasonable, right? I mean, that's reasonable, isn't it?
Absolutely fine, as long as you have a contract with them.
Yeah, and that was the result of that. And again, it might be a bad example because it might be inaccurate. But then, as you can see from this screenshot here, he got so upset about it, he went to the editor of that publication and was ranting and raving about how it was plagiarism because the freelance writer had took his work to that publication. Well, again, guys...
Definitely not the definition of plagiarism.
Yeah, and this is another thing. If you want to be an editor, you've got to know this shit. You've got to know what this shit is, right? You've got to know what plagiarism is before you start talking about plagiarism. But no, here it is. Screenshot. Proof. Because everyone goes, oh, where's your proof? Where's your proof? As if I would just pluck this out of thin air and to say, oh, I think you should be wary about this guy over here. Like what? I can't say you should be wary about this guy. I can't say that. But people can talk endlessly about how, oh, Richard Lewis has got no ethics. Richard Lewis is a scumbag. Richard Lewis choked a 12-year-old kid and then smashed him through a fucking steel cage at Hell in the Fucking Cell, DreamHack 2015. I can deal with that every fucking day, can I? Right? That's all legit. That's all fair enough for you to have an opinion. Guy who's made a life, a career out of trying to get the fucking esports scene into a place where we're not just all getting robbed by a bunch of failed businessmen with cheap suits. He's the guy that we should watch out for. When he says something, he has an agenda, right? So anyway, so there it is. He said it was plagiarism. Absolutely not plagiarism. And the fact that he was trying to intimate that it was and kind of threaten this other publication, hugely inappropriate. By the way, has a long-standing history of doing this. One of the things that these guys want to do is actively drive DK out the scene.
That's what I said before, isn't it, right? It's very surprising that the same people who don't want any criticism have actually never themselves, by the way, produced a single piece of evidence to suggest DK is wrong or a narcissist or a liar, whatever they try and claim about him. And yet this is someone they are actively trying to drive out the scene. I'm not cool with that, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not. And here's the thing, right? Like, I'm all for... I've had journalistic rivalries. Do you know how we fought our journalistic rivalries? We just did better work. That was how we did it.
The best way to do it, yeah.
We looked at the work they were doing at their publication and fucking hell, big story, right? How are we going to come back at them? How are we going to clap back? What's our thing? We didn't spend our time picking apart the shit they did. We just said, good work, bravo, we'll do better next time. We'll get the next one. That's how you do it. That's how
that also shows a different mentality, though, Richard, which is that if you yourself think you're a good journalist and you just don't like someone else's personality, why would you violate journalistic ethics and say that they are a liar and what they're doing is wrong? If you find out what they're doing is wrong, as I just said, that is a story in itself. You could publish that story. You could do all the groundwork. But to literally just go, I don't like this person, so I'm just going to lie about them, and in doing so, invalidate the credibility of our entire industry that I work in, is just stupid at best and actively malicious at worst.
So just remember all of this, because when DK quits and we lose another good journalist in esports, as has happened repeatedly multiple times down the years, just remember why it's happening. So anyway, so that's unethical as well, in my opinion. I think when you have a personal grudge against another journalist and you are constantly defaming that journalist and their work publicly, but you also happen to run an alternative rival site, ethical problems. I shouldn't need to explain this. Then, on top of that, right, there was an ex-staff member told him that, First of all, your publication is using licensed photographs from HLTV. Interesting, because that would be plagiarism. Now, again, full disclosure, because I'm not looking to fucking run game, right? I'm sure the fucking Nomad will come out and talk this. Everybody at some point has erroneously used an HLTV publication.
Even if just accidentally, because of them sadly get recropped and put out by other dodgy sites themselves. If you Google image search, you're going to accidentally get one from now on.
It's happened. I've never done it, but I ran a publication where a couple of staff members had done it. I even think there was one 1.6 writer we sort of had to reprimand because he literally copy-pasted a whole article from HLTV because he was running late. So there you go. I mean, that's my skin in the game. Nomad obviously hates me for that because that's his thing. You know, I can understand being obsessive about something that you've worked so hard to build, but I think he's always been unreasonable in that regard. Like, he still brings up that SK Gaming when you were editor. He still brings up that you guys did it once, you know, and whatever. But anyway, so this is a screenshot that shows a staff member telling him about that, right? And he said, none of your business, mate. You know, fuck you. I'm not interested. I've tried to tell people not to do it, and they still do it. So now you're actively letting that shit happen. Also, several staff members in the Discord have been sent screenshots, but it's not my style to do this, right? There are loads of just racist epithets.
No surprise there.
Yeah, loads of racist epithets. And again, as somebody that gets called a fascist and a Nazi on a daily basis, might have to do something about the haircut, I guess. Maybe get one of them nice fucking side comb-overs, eh? And a small mustache. You know, maybe go the whole fucking hog. You know, as somebody that gets called that every day, I actually don't like racism. I know it's going to surprise a lot of people. I find it absolutely disgusting and loathsome. I can't think of many things worse. It's why it triggers me so much when I get called one, right? Endlessly. And I know you're not one, but again, it's like you said, there are some edgy tweets out there which can be misconstrued. You've apologized. Yeah, you fucking... You've atoned for it. You realized you did wrong. It's never going to save you at the end of the day. It's never going to save you from the allegation. So when you see people actively doing it and another staff member says to the editor, maybe your staff member shouldn't be doing this on a public fucking Discord, you might want to do something. Again, it's called Rush B Media, isn't it? It's called Rush B. It's your name. It's like my website, Richard Lewis. If I had an employee and he was going around giving his, you know, not so palatable opinions about racial disparity in the world, I'd distance myself from that person because his views are loathsome and reprehensible. He would be let go. That would be the end of it. Gone. Bye. I don't want to associate with people who think like that. Thank you very much. And I certainly don't want my brand associated with that either. Okay? So there's evidence of that. And then just on top of that, just to give you an idea and a type of fucking the levels that go on with story verification. And again, this is just minor stuff. People will say, oh, these are all minor quibbles. They might all be minor quibbles individually. Collectively, this is why I do not feel that this publication has earned its stripes yet, right, and can be trusted. And that's all I said. Treat it all with a fucking liberal pinch of salt. That's all I said, right? I didn't say this guy was a disgrace or anything. I just said treat it like it's gossip. It's not like he hasn't been wrong. The Snacks buyout was there. I saw him on the front page of Reddit again, literally just repeating something HLTV had reported a month prior. Okay, but then look at this exchange here. There was a story about Skadoodle considering retirement, right? And again, a staff member said, oh, it looks like Skadoodle is actually staying now. And he goes, I just can't even imagine this. He probably is. I never said he wasn't, and it's true, I suppose, that the news story said Skadoodle is considering retirement. And then the next sentence, I didn't know how seriously he was considering retirement, but knew he'd voice off. Well, you've got to know. You've got to know. You've just put a story out there. It was the front page of fucking Reddit. I'm just saying there's a repercussion to that. There's a repercussion. Him saying something maybe to someone that you overheard. That was another thing. This Rush B guy on the front page again, talking about how now T Como, however the fuck you say their name, the dog shit Brazilians, yes, by the way, in case you don't follow the scene. He said he overheard another journalist talking to them.
Probably shouldn't report that then. It's not a source.
No, he legit did. And he said, oh, I overheard them talking to another journalist And that's how I know that they were going to get dropped if they didn't beat Swole.
Isn't that mental? So basically, think about this guy's world. This is why we have, by the way, like a process as to how you create a story when you're going to do a report. Because we can now get anything we want on the front page of Reddit, Rich. All we have to do is get a journalist to be stood near this cunt and say something. The journalist doesn't have to believe it. The players don't have to believe it. They're not going on record. This guy will just overhear what was said, put it out in all official media, you know, through the manner that we are wont to report such things, and it'll be out there in the public consciousness. So now you can get anything put out there because there's no checks and balances, even from him, apparently.
Yeah.
That's not good for anyone.
So as I said, right, like, just one tweet... One tweet was enough to get me called a withered old cunt, how I never promote anyone, how I'm just trying to put a good guy down. No, listen, this is the shit I care about. None of that stuff is good, all right? You might have an idea about how serious that is. If you are starting a publication and it's your name on it, like the George Foreman fucking grill. If George Foreman grills were fucking setting people alight and burning people to death, I wouldn't expect George Foreman to go, it's just my name. I just put my motherfucking name on it. I wouldn't expect that. I would expect him to say, yeah, this is bad. Like, so what do I care about the most in the scene? Accurate journalism. And I just tried to let you guys know that it's not 100% yet. And if this guy wants to, you know, fucking reach out and talk about it, that's fine. I'll do that. People also don't know this. He blocked me. It weren't the other way around, kids. You know, so if I'm butthurt and sensitive, what does that make him? I have absolutely just don't want publications that come into the space that lie and don't do things properly and fill your head with shit. That's why I brought it up. Okay, 2 days of death threats and being called a liar and for that. So fine, tell you what, let's all just tell lies. Let's all just publish any old shit we want that we gather in any fashion we want. Because hey, if it sounds good, let's just put it on the front page and let's all have you fucking idiots out there like lapping it up. Tell me more, non-accountable journalists.
By the way, I've always said this as well. I'm sure I've said it on a past episode, but my theory was always exactly what we've just discovered here, which is that when people who aren't really credible journalists in the scene start dipping their toes in a report and roster rumors, the reason why they would assume all of DK's stories must be from sources which aren't credible and are potentially made up is because that's where their sources come from. They are the ones who do that. So it's the old adage, a thief believes everyone steals. They are inadvertently letting you know they do not follow a rigorous journalistic set of ethics as to how you create a story. As you're saying, if the repercussions are incredibly serious, you must double check, you must go to all the lengths, you know. They don't do that stuff, Seth. So therefore, they're like the person who themselves is a cheater and goes, oh, I must be cheating if he beat me. But they don't say it because I also cheat. Like, you know, that's why they're so adamant, you know.
Right. So now we're going to get to something that involves you, Duncan, your favorite subject.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, so to just wrap that up in a nice little bow, guys. Yeah, sorry. I think people who have habitually lied to try and create a mystique and a career about themselves and cover up like account sharing with bans on it and all of this stuff. Yeah, I don't know if I trust those guys. Sorry, I don't think you should trust them either. Okay, and then second of all, when media publications run game like that behind the fucking scenes and are threatening people and fronting up to people and trying to shut down rival publications and rival journalists, and they don't have a rigorous standards of practice themselves or even know what the journalistic code of ethics is or even know what the word plagiarism means, yes, I have a problem with that too, because that's not the shit I want in my esports scene. But it's fine. The CS community has said that's what we want. We like that. We will threaten your life to have that. Have it. Have it, guys. I don't give a fuck. You're welcome to it. So let's do the thing that involves you now, Duncan, because you're going to really like this. I don't even think you know. I think I'm going to drop a surprise on you, brother.
Here we go.
I think I'm going to drop a surprise on you. So you know you made that comment about Zeus, right?
Yeah.
You're familiar with it. Okay.
Some point during the event, yeah.
Yeah. You basically said, for those that don't know, that he is a bot as an individual player. You made no sort of overtures.
Still stand by it. He's not a very good individual player.
Right. You made no overtures about, you know, him being a bad in-game leader. You didn't
say... believe I even said he was a great leader.
Yeah, yeah, you did. You did.
Like, you know, his only actual role in the game.
Yeah, right. And again, we've actually been critical in the past of, I certainly have, of his leadership abilities. I suppose we'll get into all of that in a second. But here's the thing. So obviously he got upset about this. Oh, and this is going to link back to the Rush B Media thing, because I almost forgot about this. He put out a tweet basically saying, ha, you're not a credible analyst. You never achieved anything in CS. Beautiful, perfect English. That's and the great, reason it's beautiful, perfect English is because it was written by that guy, Fishiest Dude.
Yes.
Now, you might not remember this. Fishiest Dude is a guy who does CIS leagues. Usually been very accurate, very good. Can't think of a notable time he was wrong and left with egg on his face. So why would you have an issue with this kid? Here's why I'd have an issue with this kid. When he had access to Zeus's account, when he was his media manager, also, by the way, highly unethical if you're working in a role like that, and just leaking information, you might hear as a matter of fact. You know, that's kind of like if I was like putting out leaks about fucking E-League when I work there. You never guess what's coming, guys. We got the major fucking 4 weeks before we announced it. I wouldn't have a job. Anyway, Fishiest Dude put out this tweet from Zeus. He is also working with Rush B Media. He handles their CIS leaks, right? This is a guy who pretended to be a professional player and put words in his mouth in the public domain because he didn't like you.
Mad, isn't it?
These are the people associated with that publication. It's not just one guy. It's fucking multiple guys that have all done these grotesquely unethical things. And they went, shit, you know all that unethical shit we did? Let's pretend we didn't do it and call ourselves journalists now.
Like, if people haven't gotten the theme yet, it's that you can't actually really make that leap. Like, if you were to try and make the leak from, like, professional shitposter online who has behind a Twitter account, and like anyone who's just not trying to make it as a businessman, you can have your own opinion, say whatever you want. You can make as edgy jokes as you want. The problem is, if you want to make the jump from that to professional in the esports industry, well, especially if your job's going to be investigative journalist, which, as I've just said, relies on credibility and the idea that people know you vet your sources and you would never report lies, you can't make that jump just with nothing. At the very least, you'd probably have to come out and say, I recant all the things I said in the past. I'm not that sort of person. You know, I realize I fucked up with some of the things I said, implying people cheated. You're just not going to be able to do it. And yet they think you can literally just go overnight like that. They don't even seem to think it's a consideration.
Yeah. Sorry, just banning retards in the chat. By the way, if you're a person here who's complaining about the rant, which I prefaced was this is what the show was going to be, just fuck off. Never come back. If you're a patron, take the money, stick it up your ass. Go away. You're the problem. I don't want you here. This is like trying to do a fucking stand-up routine with hecklers in the fucking audience. Freebird! Freebird! Fuck you. It's not for you. Do you get that? You don't matter to me. Fuck off. Right? So... anyway, you've got that guy associated with the publication. This guy wrote this tweet for Zeus. He swears Zeus wanted to say this, and I believe him. He just cleaned up the English. It's just hard to really take him seriously, because once you've pretended to be somebody, I don't know, it's kind of like one down from catfishing. It's very hard to take you seriously. Incredible, like, anymore.
Basically, for people who don't know, in the past, when he also ran the media, social media for Zeus, he once said a comment, I think it was to me, which was like slightly edgy as like a joke back, and I basically just said something like, is this literally whoever's behind this account, like, is this literally what Zeus is saying to me? And then he even sort of admitted, like, well, no, but you know, I was trying to imagine what he might have said, which is like, well, just go ahead and don't do that then, mate. You know, just stick with saying what he wants you to say. And if you want to, if he tells you do general memes, do that. You know, make a funny picture about something, make a joke as he used to do while Zeus was playing, like, oh, bloody hell, he's died in the split out. That's fine. But don't sort of like basically start a public feud that one person wasn't even actually involved in, you know. So that's why, as he's saying, yeah, the credibility for that's a bit off. Like, because that's the first thing I wonder, Rich, when I see that. That's a bit, the English is fantastic on that. Did Zeus actually say this? Did he? I mean, I saw him in the hotel, but he never said shit to me.
So here's what happened. I think Zeus was triggered by your bot comment.
Could well be the case. Yeah.
No. Do you want to know why? I don't know if you've seen this. No. On his Instagram, he actually secretly filmed you.
Seems reasonable.
The video's gone now, but I got it. You can't hide from me, Zeusy boy. So here it is. It's just 10 seconds and it's just Zeus filming you and zooming in, and he posted this to Instagram, and I got a Russian dude that I know to translate it, and he was like, and he's zooming in on you going, look out, look, there he is, look at this guy, he knows I'm filming him, he is scared. right? And that's what it says. And then it cuts to like something else. Really weird thing to do, right? Really weird thing to do, isn't
definitely
it?
Definitely didn't know he was filming me. That goes without saying. That's literally me talking to Sadakis before the after party.
Sammy, are you playing this? Did you show it? Right. Okay, good. Right. So let me just tell you. Let me just tell you, by the way, while you're acting like some mad fucking one night stand that you didn't call back. Bit weird. But anyway, can we not do this? Zeus, I'm gonna say this, brother. Hope you watch it. Get Fishiest to translate if the message isn't clear. Or just get him to pretend to be you again. Whatever you want, right? But can we not do this? Can we not do this? Because I'm telling you, if the culture, we've always had this uneasy alliance, but an alliance nonetheless between talent and journalists and pro players, that when it's an after party, after an event, and people are unwinding, we don't pull our fucking cameras out and film each other.
He already did this in the past, Richard. There was a Star series a couple of years ago where he went to the after party, filmed people without their permission, and put it on, I think, his YouTube. I can't remember where it was, but I know that there was videos of like people I wouldn't want to mention who were very, very drunk, and who were talking shit. And luckily, I don't think anything got out there that could ruin anyone's career. And it was mainly only the CIS community consuming these videos. But still, that's a mad violation. We all told him at the time, publicly and privately, please do not do that. That is not really the way to conduct yourself.
Yep. And I'm going to tell you, right? If you want to fucking let this genie out the bottle, and we all start filming each other at events. Right. Well, let me tell you.
I could catch some of them in some fucking shit, mate. Believe me.
Yeah. Well, it ain't going to be Duncan that's losing a contract because he got caught. I know. And I'm going to give some real life examples of things that have happened at after parties with no names attached to them. People trashing communal areas in hotel rooms. People raging because their card gets declined and then basically trying to fight bar staff when they ask for the bar tab to be paid, right? What about people doing cocaine pretty much unsubtly and openly at an after party in countries where cocaine, funnily enough, isn't legal or even casually acceptable?
By the way, we've never reported on this. We've never outed someone for doing that. We're supposed to be these similar unethical journalists who just report everything we hear. I've seen people do this shit. I've never even made a joke alluding to it because it's their private life. It's not a public place.
Yeah. Well, what about when you cheat on your girlfriends?
Well, of that alone. Listen, I'm not going to say in this particular instance, obviously, but the sheer number of players who've talked shit to me, who I've seen just fucking around all the time. It's like, mate, we don't want to start wars. No one wants that. Like, you've got to understand, even in the world of politics, they do have a certain area where it's like, don't go into this area, because if we all fuck each other like that, none of us have a job.
Yeah. So if this is the standard we're going to set, right, all the stupid fights, all the attempted punch-ups that get broke up, all the drugs, all the booze, all the fucking literally using prostitutes in foreign countries, if we're saying that we're going to start filming each other, as I said, me and Duncan will still have jobs.
I'll be fine, mate. I can even do out most of that shit. I'm not under some sort of mad contract that says I can't.
Yeah, right? So don't start filming each other from a distance to try and make some point about how you're a fucking hard man, because I guarantee next time you're in some shit, the camera will be pointed at you and it'll be you making the heartfelt teary apology when your fucking meal ticket goes, because people cannot be associated with the proclivities you like to get into in private, right? So let's not do that. Let's keep it fucking, you know, at least amiable. That when we go to an after party, we can let our fucking hair down, unwind in private without people violating our privacy. I think it's fucking unreal that I'm having to say that. That is something that has stood, like, just unspoken for as long as I've been in the scene. But now we're going to violate it because he said I'm a bot. Not the bot. Not a man who hasn't dropped a fucking 30 bomb since 2015, but drops one against Astralis. And now we've all got to pretend he's the best player ever. Not a guy who's probably failed to get into double digits more times than any other player I've fucking seen. Not a guy who can't even contribute enough to get his fucking team to win more tournaments, despite having two of the best players in the world and a third who's not that bad in it either.
And here's something I'll mention as well, by the way, Richard. First of all, when I make banter like that on Twitter, absolutely, obviously, it's not supposed to be like with all context and like, oh, but here's all the ways in which the person is great. You know, it's a throwaway line. But you will notice the people who I go the hardest on and say they're bots, etc., is very rarely people who are just, that's like they're trying their hardest 12 hours a day and they're just not good. Like, I'll give you an example. God B is an absolute bot. Like, he is the definition of a bot because he has tried his hardest to be as good as he can at CSGO, and his strength isn't as an in-game leader, but as an individual player, he's just never going to be up to par. You saw even in that series against FaZe Clan when they had that game on like train or whatever, where he had 8 kills. Like, this guy was trying his heart out. That's all he can manage. But doesn't matter. In his team, obviously, it's viable. My problem with Zeus is this. Guess what, Zeus? You know how you spread all your rumors from the CIS room scene? And actually, a lot of the CIS scene, very open with a lot of shit behind the scenes. Everyone in teams is just saying stuff publicly on streams, the fucking analysts, etc. The amount of shit that gets out is wild out of that scene. Well, not only has stuff come to me through those channels, but even players who've been in his teams have told me that for a number of times over the last year or so, he has not been putting in the hours, and that he has lost motivation, and that he would just do the minimum that a professional's required to do, and then he wouldn't put in the extra hours. So then when I see a performance like Star Series Season 4, where the team literally has all but won the trophy on that Mirage game, where Simple is like literally ascended beyond the fucking mere mortal plane and is now literally hacking the matrix and getting every kill possible and bullets can't hit him, when he then lose that game because some cunt has 5 kills in this game and is just giving up free money and kills all day long, and I then find out that person doesn't put in full effort because he's not that motivated and thinks he doesn't need to because, you know, he's won a major and that, not cool with that, mate. Not cool with that at all. Not down with that.
And again, understand that we, you know, look, I don't always like it, but if a player has a bad performance and we do a show where we're summarizing and encapsulating what that performance was about, and we fucking go and we fucking talk about it, then sometimes I got to say shit. Like, he played fucking terrible, didn't he? I don't enjoy it. You think I enjoy, for example, having to say fucking Skadoodle it plays terrible when literally Skadoodle is like just some, like a super nice guy, like a meek little fucking lamb. And you know it hurts his feelings. But what do I do? Do I have to like warp reality into a more palatable version of what it is? Then what's the point in doing this? I may as well go do something else. It just is what it is. And, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, right? It comes with a territory of being a pro player, comes with a territory of being a journalist. People might want to say, well, you know, Richard's, overhyped as a journalist. He hasn't broke that many big stories, actually. Suppose that's an opinion. You're entitled to it. What I wouldn't want is you saying things that aren't true and smearing my name, or fucking, you know, threatening me. But if you've got an opinion about my work, definitely voice it and articulate it. It comes with the territory. You cannot be a public figure and expect that you're going to completely be immune to criticism.
I mean, by the way, this is what Zeus actually did in just the tweet, which is totally fine. He's absolutely warranted to give his opinion like in exactly that fashion and do it publicly. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, already getting fucking morons tweeting me. This is why I mean, I can't do this anymore. This fucking scene, mate. Right? Like, what did I just say? That Fish translated that tweet for him and put it out for him? Did I say that? Is that what I said? That is what I said, right? So a guy's tweeting me going, he did not send that tweet to Thorin. I have Discord. Look, right. I didn't say he did, you fucking absolute moron. Like, I don't know what you need to do to fix your brain, but fucking fix it, please, before you interact with another human being. It's not fair on them, is it? It's not fair on them. When you're that fucked up and you just imagine things that happen and then you get angry at people for things you imagine. It's not fair you're just running around and interacting with people. It's not fair on the people that have to deal with you, the people who exist in the real plane where words have meanings and it's not voices in your mind. Fuck me. So, right, let's talk about ESL1 Cologne, shall we? So we'll segue from the Zeus thing. And again, also people going, all it was a 10-second video. It's a 10-second video of someone without their knowledge or will, which is fucked up by...
Not at
by,
the event where I work, by the way.
Yeah. We're not at the event where you agreed.
I mean, that's in my hotel lobby at like fucking midnight or something. That seems somewhat unreasonable.
Yeah, right? So that's also a problem. And then what's he saying? Look how scared he is for. What's that about? What does that mean? You know, so again, if you think that's just fine and banter and acceptable, get in touch with me, tell me where you work, and I will follow you around with a camera for a day, giving commentary on your life. Happy to do it. I'll come, I'll take the time, I've got the money now, I'll certainly have the time now that I am not doing anything in this fucking garbage fucking scene, right? I will come to where you work if you've got the balls to say who you are, and I'll just walk around filming you with a phone and uploading it to Instagram. See how you like it. I guarantee you won't. I guarantee you'll get fucking triggered. ESL1 Cologne. So obviously I'm on suicide watch anyway, because it was the worst possible outcome for me. Because Na'Vi.
Right, I see.
Yeah. Na'Vi basically fucking won another title. And obviously I said, quite famously now, no doubt, that they've won three in a row, that there is no way they could win titles while they still had Zeus and Edward on the books, right? So
you did also say that before they swapped Electronics' role and he became super good.
Yeah, sure. But
it's pretty key context.
Yeah, but no, it's all right. I'll hold the L on it. It's fine. It won't be the first time. You know, we all remember the VP phase thing. So I'm all right with it, mate. But basically, I was super surprised. I didn't have Na'Vi winning this at all. And I think we'll start by injecting some positivity into the podcast. Not that it's fucking worth a fuck to do so at this point. But yeah, basically, you know, I think what's happened to Na'Vi is they have become a very well-rounded team. I still think Edward is fucking dead weight. I don't understand what he does. Okay, Zeus is the in-game leader. We talk about that a lot. But you actually gave credit to him in an interview talking about the Zeus system, which of course nobody picked up on. At the same time, you were saying he was a bad individual player, which is true. And the statistics back that up. But I think what has happened with Na'Vi to get them to a place where they can actually win titles is, yes, Zeus is now starting to make a much more telling contribution, but Flamey has started to achieve a level of consistency. That's been key for me, because, and it's a lot harder to quantify, because he's always been a feast and famine player, right? Always been a feast and famine player, but now it's Electronic. They've changed his role. He is delivering out of the world numbers, sometimes even outfragging Simple, doing more damage than Simple on a server. This is unthinkable that you could get a player who, at the end of Cologne, there was a genuine conversation about whether or not Electronic could have been the
for
MVP.
Sure.
You know, I think Simple got it officially, but a lot of people were like, nah, you know what? I think Electronic might be the difference maker. That for me is the only world in which Na'Vi could have beaten an Astralis or a team like that, even a FaZe, I would say. But now I got to hand it to them. They genuinely do look like a top three team in the world with all of the parts firing. And the question now becomes, how long can they maintain this? Winning ESL1 Cologne is no joke. Like, if you win a format like that, like all the other tournaments they won, the other two tournaments they won, there's caveats, you know, yes. Home soil, this, that.
Some teams missing.
Yeah, some teams missing. This is just a fucking legit win against the best teams in the world in a brutal, unrelenting format.
This so tournament's harder to win than the major. As all the top teams, the format's way better. Like, massive stage environment. Like, it's just as hard.
So tell me about it then. I mean, like, do we need to sit down here and revise what we thought about Na'Vi? Like, like when you look at waves and like the ascension where teams sort of, you know, are on the come up, there's always a peak point where you kind of sense this is it for them now. But like, can Na'Vi go to the major and potentially win it?
I think there's an outside chance they could win the major. I think what actually helps them at the major is that I think the format's more forgiving, if anything, because you can definitely have a lot more variance. We don't have any double elimination component of the major. You never know with those fucking Swiss systems how the draws are going to get done, so you can get an easy side of the bracket. Sure, all those things can happen. The thing I think about Na'Vi is, though, like, if you even look at the way they beat Astralis, because Astralis is the big opponent they played here and beat them, they narrowly won. You know, it wasn't like they had a really commanding performance. Then obviously they never got to play FaZe. They played Big instead, who I think by the final, a lot of that had just, the Cinderella story was starting to come unraveled. You know, people finally had a sense of how to play them. So I do think Na'Vi's a very, very good team. And I think finally the difference between now and a few months ago is their placings demanded that they be ranked like second or third in the world, but they didn't pass the eye test at all. If you looked at them actually play, you were like, this can't be the third best team in the world. Like, look at the way they can lose a map to this team, or the way they'll always fuck up this aspect to the game, and then you look at the fact simultaneously they're being carried by the best solo carry we've ever had. Everything said, that doesn't check out as a number three team in the world. They do now. Now they legit do look like well-rounded. As you're saying, they've got a duo now. Electronic's fucking fabulous in his own right. When Flamey only has to be like a contributing member, guess what? Yeah, that guy can overperform, give you really big games. He's going to be
especially
solid
on Mirage, right?
Yeah, for sure. Just a really solid player. And then on top of that, because you've got the maddest firepower in the world with Cold Zero, with fucking Simple and Electronic, which is reminiscent of when you had Cold Zero and Fur, who both would put up MVP numbers every tournament. Yeah, you can get away with having people who don't frag very much like Zeus, as long as he runs the system and runs the team. And I have to say, that's another part that changed. I don't know if it was something to do with Electronic's role earlier in the year, but even the style of calling Zeus had looked terrible. They just looked really lost. They fucked up a lot of executes. They didn't even get the bomb down in time. It was like very amateur stuff. Now, to be fair, that's because Zeus was still running the style he's always run, which is a very slow-paced style where you try to make this key read in the last 10, 20 seconds before you're going to hit the site, and then you go on that. And that's why it's so hard to read if you do it, and why you can grind out rounds. Problem was, they didn't have the pieces to make it work. Now that style works. Like, you look, it's actually pretty legit. When they go on the T side, they can win the T half against most teams. It's actually pretty impressive stuff. They've got a whole bunch of maps they can do it on now. It's not just like we do it on Inferno, maybe Mirage. That's about it. Now they've got a half decent map pool as well. You've seen them play a number of the top teams on the other maps. Maybe Dust2's a little bit of a problem. I think that's what people are going to now focus against them, because they've shown a little bit of weakness on it. But I do think they're a legit team. I do think they're a world-class team. I still would definitely put the Astralis of the world ahead of them. But in a world where FaZe doesn't have a proper fifth, Mouse Sports are dropping off. Astralis is basically the only team you can conclusively say is ahead of Na'Vi, I think.
I'm inclined to kind of agree with it. Like at this point, FaZe have got this ongoing issue. We'll talk about that in a second. But like right now, like when you talk about sort of great Counter-Strike duos in the world, you know, for years it was like, you know, Device and Dupree. You know, you talk about like Guardian Nico. We looked at Na'Vi as a one-man team. And what a fucking player it was, you know, like it happened to be the best player that's probably ever existed in CSGO history in terms of the skill ceiling that he's at right now. Now, like just having somebody that's capable of stepping up on the rare occasion Simple does have an ordinary by his standards game is going to put them over the top. Now, I'll just get some thoughts here because we've obviously talked about Zeus and a lot of people think we don't have any respect for him. I'll just say this. I think his contribution is certainly, how should we say, overrated by people that have a nostalgia in Counter-Strike, you know? But there is no denying, at the end of the day, the trophies in the cabinet, the tenure he's got, you can't take that away from him. But for me, there's always question marks that when he was, like, people talk about his in-game leadership and his systems and all this. People need to remember that for a large period of time, there was people who wanted to get out of Na'Vi because of how Zeus was as a fucking drill sergeant, very firm, only has one gear, and it's do the fuck as I say. Now, if you look into Flamey's life, and you know that Flamey, for example, has had quite a tough time, quite a tough upbringing, and has achieved some fantastic things despite all of that. You know, he's somebody that I don't think as a personality archetype is going to respond to somebody getting all up in their face. And we've seen notable examples going back to like 2015, 2016, you know, where there's been like interactions where, you know, you think what you
need. I doubt it's a coincidence that Flamey took off as a player when Starix became the in-game leader.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, we remember that, right? and equally as well, it's not that Simple loved the system so much and loved working with Zeus so much. He didn't consider leaving. Had it not been for Na'Vi's outrageous fucking buyout nonsense, you know, these guys are already in fucking MIPR, which would have worked out better for everybody. So I think he's very one-dimensional as an in-game leader. I think he understands the game. I think when it comes to application, though, I think there's a very good chance that it's only going to work when you're winning. Now they're finally winning. You know, the sky's the limit, right? But let's not forget how long it took them to get to this point where you could sort of reliably bank on Na'Vi to basically fucking actually go and win a tournament.
For me, this is the big problem. I see this as a big divide in how people are looking at people who are the in-game leader. For me, it's like a football manager. right? When you have someone who's been a football manager for 10 years, they've been around a bunch of different leagues, they've had some successes, they've had the teams that haven't been the successes. You don't bring that guy in to just a random team and say, right, here's this team, coach them. What you do is you try and say, right, my sort of team's got the kind of players this guy likes. You know, this guy likes to play, I don't know, just a lot of passing game. He likes to play a really, you know, gritty style where we're going to have like hard defense. You get the man for the job and you give him the tools to do the job. That's what I think real in-game leaders are like. The real in-game leaders each have their own philosophy on the game. Oftentimes they've built that up through a lot of hard-won experience and trial and error. They've gone through the tough times when it didn't work. And they've, over the years, hopefully learned the sorts of players that can work with them. Learn the players that they can't deal with. Some people obviously can't deal with a simple Anik or whoever it might be. They need someone who's a bit more of a team player, someone who's got a different mentality, you know, whatever it might be. So to me, the secret in Counter-Strike is you got to get the right players into the team for that in-game leader's style. And if that in-game leader's good, but he's got the wrong team, that's sometimes where he has to move on. Like, for example, okay, there's a rumor at the moment going around that maybe Cold Zero is going to leave MIBR. Now, everyone who's seeing that might immediately say, like, oh, it's the end of MIBR, they'll be dead. I'll tell you right now, I guarantee they won't be. Like, if Cold Zero leaves that team, I know it's up in the air at the moment. I would place a heavy bet that Fallen finds some other players, shapes them in a different way, makes a totally different team, but has massive success. Because I still think his body of work, his philosophy, his view on the game has enough legs to it that he could get different players that would fit his style still. And so to me, that was part of the thing with Zeus. Does he have the best style? I don't think so, personally. I think that's why his whole career has been, in CSGO at least, has been about grinding out wins. You're never the dominant team, front running, dominating people. You're never doing shit like Astralis is doing, where you just win your pick, their pick, 2-0 everyone, piss all over the tournament. No, it's not that level of like so far ahead of everyone, but it's got its own charm, it's got its own strengths, and if you put the right players in it, it can work.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other big story then, because we're already running out of time. That's what happens, I guess, if you just demand that people tell you evidence and give you their opinions. We can't talk about actual Counter-Strike and the cool shit that's been going on. And the reason we're running out of time is because Sam's going to be traveling to Vegas, where we're going to do some real shit when he gets out here and do the stuff that I'm interested in. And just, like I say, letting you guys just get robbed blind by all the fucking scum and charlatans in the scene, because that's what you want. So, let's talk about Big. Obviously, again, when I said it was on Suicide Watch, you know, there was the whole fucking Smooya issue. Just as an aside, Smooya had been going around begging like people to ask me to unblock him.
He is young, to be fair. So I give him a bit of leeway, you know.
That
seemed like a little bit of a cunt, all the same.
Yeah, but so I did. I actually did, and I said, "Listen."
Did he immediately go up in your grill by any chance?
No, he didn't. I unblocked him like at the tournament started, and then I tweeted ceremonial unblocking, so he knew a few days later. And then when he got to the final, I just messaged him saying, you know, you played really well, mate. Like, enjoy the final. And his immediate response was, "Fuck you."
It might be something like that.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and then he went, "Just talking to me because I got to a final." I don't give a fuck, mate. I don't give a fuck if you got Thanos out of existence. You look like your mother tried to drown you in a fucking chip pan, you greasy rat. I don't give a fuck what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, you're not important because you made it to one fucking final. You're not worth my time. It was just a civil little thing that I thought I'd fucking do to try and, like, you know, calm the beef. UK, bros, all of that. Love the banter. Nah. You can't even talk to these people. They get one little achievement in their life and they think they've fucking made it. Let's see how many more major finals you get to, kid. Because this is the problem with fucking trash talk. You got to back it up all the time if that's your brand. And just as a reminder, why'd you call him the Rat King? Let's go over it again. Because, I'm going to talk about what the fuck I want if it's all the same with you.
Because basically, he just went around spreading a bunch of shit that he actively knew was false.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Well, not even that. Do you want to know what he actually also did? Do you remember that investigation into Reason Gaming in the UK where the Esports Integrity Coalition were worried about match fixing? And the one thing they fucking said was, can nobody talk about this who is involved?
Right.
And Smooya knew about it and just put it in the public domain, potentially compromised the match fixing investigation for ESIC just because he wanted to show that he was in the know. And of course, he's done a bunch of other stuff, hasn't he, where he just fucking rats people out. I mean, he even was like telling people to tell me, I'll give you a story, I'll rat somebody else out if you just don't block me. Mental. So anyway, you know, he played a great tournament, but yeah, just as a person, I don't know. He's got some fucking issues, dude. And I can't, I guess we can't reconcile that and be, and ever sort of even be civil. He is the only pro player I have had to block because of his, think about that again. So anyway, so Big made it to the final, and it was, again, a bittersweet moment for me, because those of you remember, I did spend some time living with the guys in NRG, Gobby, Legia, as sort of the hangovers from that, because it was in the pre-Tabson era. Tabson, if you remember, came in as a stand-in for that famous tournament where they went and beat Envious in Croatia. Yeah, Counterpit, that was it. I was watching, how Big did. And again, you want to talk about systems. Well, the work that they've put in, finally, everything's clicked. I think Big, they were able to bring Tizian through the ranks. Great thing I will say is Tizian had a couple of maps where he went missing, never seemed to phase him. He was just back in the next map doing what he should be doing. The big occasion didn't get to him for a prolonged period of time. Samuya was a massive sort of question mark. How would he cope on the big stage? Absolutely getting work done. Incredible player, definitely talented. The best thing the UK is, that produced in fuck knows how long since the Source days. Obviously, like I say, has put the system in place. Legia seems to be doing things as a coach, more on a motivational aspect, I would imagine, but definitely seems to be rounding up the troops. Tabson and Nex are the big story. Again, like, Nex fucking actually turned up on a stage match for the first time since that tournament at fucking Dennis Galen's house for Take TV, where we all thought he was going to be the German equivalent of Shox. So just so many good things for Big right now. Now, here's the question for you. Is this a legitimate evolution of the team? Because, again, or is this home advantage? You did a video about it. Occasion, miracle Cinderella run. Or is this actually bigger, a legit fucking top 10 contender now?
You definitely have to add in some context to the run. And so here's some. First of all, this isn't a team that people have played a lot in big matches on LAN. So they haven't been figured out. They haven't got the same track record. People don't even necessarily know what their strong maps are. So some very interesting vetoes against them, quite frankly. Anyone who'd done a little bit of research, it seemed like some of the top teams... It was either the classic thing where you haven't researched them so you don't know their map pool, or you literally don't respect their map pool and you think, well, it doesn't matter, I can just play this against them anyway, which shows usually that they haven't beaten enough good teams on LAN to earn that respect. That's the way it tends to work in the scene. Then you've got to add in that most of their wins in this tournament, the big ones, were in very close fashion, except for the G2 Esports Dust 2 game where they battered them. And even in that series, had a very close game on their own map pick. Every other one was a 2-1. It was them crawling through really close maps. They even got smashed by Fnatic. People forget that in the group stage. They got absolutely embarrassed. JW went off on them. So even within the context of this really sick run, one of the best Cinderella stories we've had in many, many years, still, even there was a few holes. But with that said, if I have to factor in people getting to know them, preparing for them, there are a solid enough set of pieces in this team that with Godby's leadership, yeah, I think there could be a solid, I'd almost be certain they'll be a top 10 team. I think they could make the odd run. I don't think they're ever going to do this again. I think that's probably unrealistic. I do think if you look at the squad, though, some things make a lot of sense in it. Like, if Nex really has gotten to a level where he's not going to be bothered by these sorts of nerve issues on stage, which, to be fair, he did have that happen on the last map of the final, but whatever, they were losing anyway. Generally, he impressed me with how many maps he was able to keep it up. This is the thing, people don't realize we weren't banging on this guy because we wanted him to fail. Behind the scenes, anyone who saw this guy in practice would tell you he had bonkers aim. He was supposed to be a really, really strong player. It's just that when he got out of tier 2 tournaments into a tier 1 tournament in a playoff scenario, you could just go ahead and bet your fucking house he was going to fail utterly and not show up. That's what people like Nico had to learn when they played Tabson when he was in this team last year. They just knew that that guy won't be there. So if he's going to turn up and be anything like a star like he was here, you've already got a chance, because Tabson is a really well-rounded player. So he's not just going to put up raw numbers. He's going to affect the game in many ways. He was even fucking secondary opening this tournament. Looked this good doing it. This is how well-rounded the guy is. So he's a Swiss Army knife, mate. He can do whatever you want.
Yeah, this is what I was going to bring up, though. what I thought was really interesting was they had so many AWPing options on the team. Like Tabson picked up the secondary AWPing role. Obviously, Smooth is a great primary AWP, but really showed that he can hang at the international level and hit some great shots, you know, just consistently throughout the tournament. But also, God B picked up the fucking AWP and was getting work done with it. So, and that's something he hasn't done since 1.6. And even Legia said, we didn't even know he was really going to do that. He just sort of tried it a couple of times in practice just before the tournament, and on some maps he was even doing it. So the other thing that got brought up a lot was their utility usage, which was just off the fucking charts. Really impressed a lot of the analysts. You know, Henry G was fucking creaming about that over the course of the broadcasts with his, whoa, look at that smoke. I made him sound like Alan Partridge there. He's not like that. But yeah, I mean, like, obviously, if you're a pro player, there was just so much to appreciate about this. Now, I'm going to say, from knowing God B, all of that does stem from him. All of that does literally stem from him. He is the guy that when everyone else is tucked up in bed, getting ready for the big game, he sits at a PC and is like, he will go pixel by pixel around a map, trying to find angles for smokes and flashes and Molotovs. He's got so many of them. It's ridiculous. Like if he ever wanted to just put out like a comprehensive playbook of all the smokes and flashes and mollies he's found, I guarantee there would be some in there that like aren't well known to even high level pros. He just knows so much about it. So, they are now a team that is greater than the individual components within it. The sum of its parts is much, much better. I don't know. I don't know what that means within the context of World Counter Strike right now. I don't know if they're being a little bit buoyed because it is a very weak top 10. It's the weakest top 10 that I can think of that we've had in terms of overall caliber. But I think Big are definitely for me solidly within that top 10 now. And I think they'll go to other competitions.
The one thing I do think is the biggest question mark, though, because here's the thing. Nek still has to prove it at a few more tournaments before I really buy that he's got an overall issues, you know. Yeah, but, okay, it looked good enough here. I could believe it. The Smooya one is the one that's the big question mark for me, because when you look at this squad, like, despite how many highlights you can remember in your mind from the tournament where he hit, like, a great orb shot or he won a big clutch, you know, you go look at his stats. This is what I made a tweet about. They're pretty pedestrian, actually. Like, he wasn't anywhere close to the stats of a star player, but his impact in the game didn't tell you that. So I will say, maybe this is, again, credit to the fucking Godfather, because Smooya's style of play, if you wanted it to be a traditional primary AWPer, it's terrible. It's not, you can't hold a spot and just kill three people that come from there, reposition, just always hold the best angle. He's not going to do that. What he does is aggressively push up, take duels, hit the shots, because, you know, not a lot of people actually have the confidence to do that. And so he's a really good playmaker. And I actually saw against some players, I thought it was actually happened against Guardian on the FaZe series. It's not that Guardian was literally shut down. It's that it just threw him off that Smooya was always like trying to actively take a weird duel with him or like advance onto a position where he was holding. So in the end, I think they managed to make it work within Big, because the upside of it is it's playmaking, you're trying aggressive stuff, you're putting an unpredictability into a team. But then on the other side, you've got Tabs in there with another AWP anyway, who's going to hold in that very stable, smart, hold the angles tile away, and the rest of the team set up that you can have someone be a little bit of a wild card. So I thought in a way he was kind of like British JW. I thought it worked pretty well, but I think that all folds back into the system. So I've got to see how, if that's going to happen in the next events, because this is the thing, when you're a young player like that, you might do that just because you have the mad confidence to believe it can work. But I want to see how that style develops. Does he refine it? Does he stay as the same sort of player?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, look, just add to the Smooya thing, because obviously, as I said, I think as a person, he's fucking garbage. He is obviously like one of those kids at school. Like, we had a lot of these in UK Counter-Strike especially, where, I'm sure you know this, where it was like they couldn't be in a gang because they were like from two nice backgrounds. So they were like, yeah, we demand them. Brah, brah, brah. It's like, you play Counter-Strike, you play video games, dude. Like, I know about those fucking people and it ain't you. So obviously, like, he kind of carries himself, you know, like that, but he ain't like that. It's just like a little sort of gangster fantasy that's in a safe.
He also doesn't seem to I have to say, he also doesn't seem to actually understand banter. Like, here's the thing. I've said this a million times. I'm totally up for banter. If anyone wants to say I'm a shit analyst or whatever, it's not really the most original angle to go with. But you know what? It's a line of banter. The problem is, when you're doing it as banter, it has to be, there's got to be a jokey element about it. When Smooya just says, fuck you, it's quite clear he actually just thinks, fuck this guy. It's not doing it for fun. It's not his idea of being joke. If he was, it'd be cool, but It's not a cheap answer. I don't think he knows what
Bradley is. And I forgot out with the whole Rat King thing. He did also lie about the Epsilon stuff, didn't he? Totally forgot about
that. That's what I was referring to, yeah.
Yeah.
He lied about his own team's situation. Curried favour. Even got a massive fucking talent member.
Which we tried to help him with as well.
Had a talent member come out on his behalf when the entire thing was lies the whole time. And he was the only one lying in the situation.
Yeah, fantastic. Great guy. So anyway, but I will say this, like when you put yourself out there and you fucking trash talk, when you put yourself out there and you're doing that and you're saying, we're going to win, we're going to do this, you have to carry yourself and not wilt under the pressure. But what you're effectively doing is to try and get inside the mind of your opponent. You are creating an extra component of pressure to your game. And he seems to be able to cope very well with that. Like
that
he definitely doesn't
when he did that, like against Team Liquid, MIBR. Yeah. That was good, partner. I like that.
No. Exactly. And anybody who thinks me and you have an issue with that, no, we need more of that in the scene, you know, absolutely. But again, like, obviously, as I said, you got to get it done. But I think in terms of mental fortitude, it's obviously like the thing that gives him the problems he's got is obviously the thing that makes him immune to the pressures, if you like.
Yes.
Because he just clearly doesn't give a fuck. So it's one of those like mixed bags, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, good for him, though. And good for Big. Like I said, I'm super happy for Godby and Legia. Let's hope they can go out there and do it again. We've got time for one more topic. We'll have to wrap up Cologne at some of the points. Again, as I said, we don't have to rant and rave about bullshit. We get to talk about the events, which I'd much rather do, but whatever. So let's talk about one of the flops, because we haven't brought up a flop. Let's talk about
there's a few in this tournament, right?
Let's talk about fucking Liquid. We haven't talked about Liquid the last few episodes. We can talk about all the others later. But let's talk about Liquid. Absolutely fucking wilting like lettuce under a fucking spotlight, mate. And, you know, I don't know what the fuck is going on with them, because, again, on paper, and when they had that initial spike when Taco joined, a lot of people in the scene kind of felt like this is it now. Liquid are going to overtake Cloud9. They're going to be the dominant force in North America and an international force. And this has sort of been like the second dawn of Liquid on that basis, maybe even the third, where they flatter to deceive, but then they don't get it done at tournaments. And I know you've been a big proponent of Liquid. You've talked a lot about all of their positives. I mean, honestly, losing to North, who then go and make an inexplicable roster change, by the way, in the removal of Mertz, which we'll cover on Friday. What the fuck is up with Liquid? Why are they wilting? Was it that they were doing so well because Nitro found that mad form where he was like the AWP of the in-game leader, hitting all of his shots, doing mad fragging, but now that just isn't happening? Or is it something more structural to the team? Like what's going on for your mind? Because they should be doing better.
Yeah, especially because you look at the teams they're losing to. So when they were at the Star Series, they lost to NRG. Okay, they got revenge on them at ECS, but who gives a fuck? He still lost to a team that had no bearing on the world rankings at the time. He was supposed to be a potential winner of the tournament. Then obviously they lost to the FaZe Clan at Belo Horizonte with a stand-in, where FaZe has even said after the fact, we did not practice with this player. We just went and played the games. Again, if you're the team without the stand-in, these aren't excuses to lose against these squads. So it's the teams they're losing against. I don't mind if they lose to Astralis and FaZe in a proper scenario. That's legit. But yes, there's something so brittle about this team. Like, I still think you look at the lineup, logically, they have a fantastic roster of players. They're really, really good. But do they actually work as a team? I think that's far more questionable. I also think that when a team like that has the skill and it's working at some point in time, then stops. First question you got to ask is, what's the in-game leader situation? And we know the in-game leader situation has always been a tortured one. Basically, the only time you give credit Nitro credit as an in-game leader is when they have a little spike and they do well. And actually, you give him credit sort of in a way of like, I'm not sure what he's doing, but somehow it's working. I feel like that can't last forever. Is he just going to be an in-game leader the whole time in Team Liquid? Is he never, ever allowed to be considered to be removed? Like, it feels like that's the key part they're missing to me. The rest of the squad I still think is really good. Very young, to be fair, but even so, it's not an excuse. Astral's very young as well.
We all saw the rumors and what looked to be somebody jumping the gun on Team Liquid social media, and it looks like Cold Zero. You know, this is a huge topic that I'm actually going to write a column about for VP Esports, but just sort of the breaking apart of MIBR and the rift between Cold Zero and Fallen, which has always been a fractious relationship that seems to have finally split apart. And it looks like Cold Zero is going to be joining. Now, obviously, the natural replacement, it would have to be Nitro. I couldn't conceivably see how you could drop anybody else. It backs up your theory as well, that Cold Zero really did need a Taco or someone to basically enable him and prime him, and Cold Zero's had that point of self-awareness. Where he's maybe not so self-aware is that if this roster move is legitimate and he is joining Team Liquid and he is replacing Nitro, I kind of get the sense that Cold Zero is going to be the in-game leader. And I just think, brother, it ain't you. You know, like there are players out there that I know can in-game lead, could transition to in-game leader, even just do a functional 60-70% above average in-game leadership role. Hell, there's a lot of in-game leaders out there that I don't think can actually in-game lead. So it's like, you know, if you're in that 60-70% bracket, you're doing better. Cold Zero ain't it for me. I think he's a star player. I think you deploy him. I think you use him. I think you utilize him. If he's the guy that's going to be thinking about all the fucking moving parts and telling you where to go and what to do and what maps we're going to veto and watching demos and all this bullshit, I think you're not going to get Vintage Cole back. So I hope that isn't true, but it definitely looks like that once again, Team Liquid are just going to fucking throw that fucking dice and go and spend money on a big name player and hope that it clicks and hope that finally this is going to be the missing part of that fucking puzzle that they've been trying to put together for 2 fucking years now. Like, there cannot be an organization that's spent as much money as Team Liquid in Counter-Strike now. It's got to eclipse even FaZe.
Especially if you did that thing where, like, you know, you factor in for inflation. If you did that, they are easily number one. Like, that's one thing you can never say. Everyone who's complaining about when Cloud9 doesn't make a big move. To be fair, it's not like Team Liquid's showing them up with the opposite strategy. Team Liquid makes every big move. They pull the trigger on all the big deals. They pay whatever it takes to get someone. And I've always credited them for that, but it hasn't always worked. It's had actually somewhat relatively underwhelming level of success in as kind of a return on that.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, we're kind of in the last 2 minutes before Sam needs to go and pack. So I guess we'll leave it there. Now, the plan is, Sam, can I bring you in on this? Are you here?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, there he is. He unmutes himself. So are we going to be able to do Friday if you're here?
I mean, up to you, but...
Well, like, we'll have computers and machines and everything, right?
Probably, yeah. We'll see, mate. We'll find out.
Okay, it's reassuring because we've got to do 5 episodes this month, so we're definitely going to get through them, because again, we love the patrons. We are now officially, or at least I am on the clock only for the patrons. Like, that's it. Like, no patronage, whatever, no sponsorship, whatever. The idea of sort of casually trying to do stuff in Counter-Strike now or working events or whatever, just not interested. So yeah, so we're going to try and do Friday. That's the plan. And we will finish talking about Cologne there. Also, as well, to all the people who say, oh, you should get a job. Big announcements come in, I think, in about 3 hours. My new job's going to be revealed. I can't wait. It's going to make people sick to their stomach.
Richard Lewis Media launching.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. yeah, if you've got any hot leaks, get at me. I don't need to verify them. Just tell me. Like I say, yeah, I think the announcement comes later today. So looking forward to it. So yes, we will wrap up ESL 1 Cologne on Friday, and we'll talk about some of the big roster moves that are happening. Lots going on. But for now, we've got to end it so Sam can go and get on a plane. So there you have it. So we've got one quick question from one of our $100 patrons. And basically, it's just for you, Thorin. He said, when you went to ESL 1 Cologne, this is from Jerky's Minion, by the way, a guy who was blocked on Twitter and then, funnily enough, got unblocked and became a patron and a friend. It's weird how it all works if you're just reasonable. What part of the Cologne setup this year did you like the most? And it can be any part of the event or event production.
Let me think. Yeah, what would I pick? I actually kind of like, one thing that I noticed some tournaments don't do is some events like try to have a studio environment. So even though it might be in a massive stadium and there might be some epic atmosphere, you would never know if you were an analyst, because you're just in a fucking room that might sometimes isn't even in the same building, and you're just in front of a green screen with cameras pointed at you and only 10 people in the room, half of them working behind the camera. So in that setting, I have to say, you can't really translate what the atmosphere was and if the fans were actually going, but you can't really, I know people don't realize this, but you can't actually get that off the camera shots. Like, one of the reasons some people think some crowds are amazing when they've only seen it online, that just means they did a very good job miking up that crowd. I've seen crowds that were amazing that just didn't translate. So one thing I thought was quite cool was that we actually had the analyst desk like you would have in American sports, where you're sort of within the fan area, sort of. And so you have that atmosphere element where you can kind of see what's going on. And so I thought it was just quite cool. Just personally, I found that to be a bit more memorable than the events that are the kind of sterile setup.
Yeah, and look, I know we, in the last episode, we went hard on the fucking crowds, right? And like pandering to the crowd. There was less of that this time around. I don't know if you had anything to do with it. But this was
the counterbalance.
Yeah, yeah. This was the time that if you were going to do it. I mean, on the last day especially, it looked like there wasn't a seat. Yeah, it looked like there wasn't a seat in the building. The fucking chat. That is just such a fantastic advertisement.
I don't think this went out on the stream, but unless I'm mistaken with my timeline, I think it was when Big won Dust 2, so when they won their map in the series. During the break, there was actually a massive conga line of people doing the conga, singing the song themselves, up and down the like middle of the part where you sit on the floor, floor seating, basically. People were actually going ham like that.
Yeah, I mean, fucking, it was just such a great advertisement for Counter-Strike and for esports in general. I know there was a lot of shit being talked about the whole Facebook deal. I wanted to get into that on the show as well.
It's weird, Richard, because people always tell us that if we're critical of things, that is inherently negative and will actually kill esports growth. But they don't seem to apply that to themselves, do they?
No, never. So we'll get into that as well, because they finally sort of come out and address the elephant in the room about Facebook, which I still think is a net good for esports. And I guess I need to put out a video sort of revising that and explaining why. But we'll get into it. So there you go. Boom. That's the show. All that remains to be said is to thank the patrons that make it possible. $100 patrons: Botvic, Chris and Win, Detlef Insomniac, TTM, XMP, Hyolu Ruxin, Jerky's Minion, the $50 patrons: the Archangel Varau, Sard Sawar, Daniel Plamenov Yordanov, Pete Bistrup, TC Owens, Vexi, Nastradamus, Marcus Kiumpar, Madsen, Oli Ginter Zillin, Colin Penny, Mama Jama Hennessy, Benakagi Assassin, and William Southern. You obviously do mean the world to both me and Duncan. You are keeping the podcast alive. Thank you very much. From everybody involved, we'll buy the numbers. We'll hopefully see you on Friday. Sam's having a safe flight to Vegas. Duncan's going to be doing Duncan things. So yeah, we'll see you in a few days. Until then, take care of yourself.